The Legends Radio Network now presents Lyrics and Legends with your host, Jerry Webb.
The program is Lyrics and Legends one more time. Got my old friend Buck Weatherby in the studio with me. And hey, you know, I went to one of the best live shows I've been to in I don't know how long. And you and I are both kind of...
I was there.
We've been to a few live music shows.
I've been to a couple in my day.
Yeah, we went to one here recently over at Sugar Creek Casino that...
Hinton, Oklahoma.
Had some old boys from Kentucky over there. And on the phone with us tonight, Buck, is Greg Martin, lead guitar player for the Kentucky Headhunters. Greg, welcome to the program.
I'm so happy to be here. I'm happy to be anywhere. After last year, I would say a cuss word, but that's really out of my nature a little bit sometimes. But I'm just happy that we're sitting and we're going to get through this year by the grace of God.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm glad to be on your show so much. It was so nice meeting you guys at Sugar Creek.
Greg, you're kind of like I am. People will walk up to me and say, hey, it's good to see you. And I said, hey, it's good to be seen.
Exactly. And we had a good time at Sugar Creek. You know, of course, we got to meet, besides meeting you guys, we got to meet Miss Wanda Jackson.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
And that was a thrill. I never thought I'd ever get to meet her, you know, but it was really cool. And she seemed like a really sweet lady.
Yeah, she's an Oklahoma girl.
That's right.
She was right there on the front row.
Yeah, it was so funny.
I know. I kept looking.
Crash the party, yeah. But I was like, they're going to think you're an idiot if you go up there and do that. So I was nice. I didn't go bust in or anything. But
that was a great show, though, Gary. One of the best I've ever seen. And, Greg, you guys just have it put together so well as the Kentucky Headhunters. And, I mean, everybody I talked to that was at the show said, oh, my gosh, those guys were great.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, we've been together a long time. I mean, the Headhunters officially started in 1986 as the Headhunters. And the funny thing is, it's the four guys that are out there now, Doug, Richard, Fred, myself. You know, we started the band. And, of course, Ricky Phelps was in the band for about, he was in there about 5 or 6 years. And
Doug's brother.
But Doug's brother. He was the original. He was the singer that most, he did the lion's share of the singing on Picking on Nashville. And Electric Barnyard, and that's a whole other story. I'm sure Richard probably elaborated on that a little bit. Maybe I'm not sure, but you know, the band that we got now, it's the same band that started in March of 1986. And I was telling somebody today in another interview, actually, Richard, Fred, and I started playing together in 1968, and we played off and on till 1981. In 1981, I recently got married, and I had to take a job. I had to do something. It was a musician's job, but it actually paid the bills really well, and I learned a lot. And the very first day that I took the job, I met Doug Phelps, and that's when I joined Ronnie McDowell's band in October 1981. I mean, 40 years ago this month. And Richard, Fred, and I, we had to split up for a little bit, and everybody did different things, which actually helped when the Headhunters came back together. Richard jumped into writing songs at Acuff Rose, and he became he's a really great songwriter, but he jumped headfirst into that. Fred ended up playing with Sylvia for a brief period. I'm not sure if Richard talked about that. But we put the Headhunters together in 1986 as a chance to play some rockabilly and blues. And that was my whole intention. It was nothing other than, okay, I love working for Ronnie. He's a great boss. But the blues thing was going on at the time. With Stevie Ray had spearheaded it. You know, he brought it back to life.
Oh, did he?
And I said... Yes, in a good way. And the Texas guys were just killing it. You know, Jimmy Vaughn, Anson Funderburg.
Johnny Winter.
So many great. Oh, yes. Johnny, we were listening to Johnny back in 68, 69. So, yeah. But in 86, you know, it just came to the point where, you know, okay, I've got to, you know, I'm making a living, but I'm not really feeding the inner self, so to speak, you know, musically. And me and Richard and Fred got talking. and we were going to talk to our cousin Anthony about playing bass. And he had recently gotten married, and he said, I don't know if I want a chance getting in another band. And he kind of backed out of it and just said, I don't want to do that. And we brought Doug Phelps up to my basement. Initially, we started out in my basement up here in Glasgow at another house, and we jammed, and the guys liked Doug, and that was the Headhunters. That was the genesis of the Kentucky Headhunters. So the very band you see today is the very band that started this whole mess back in 86, you know.
Now that is rare.
It is. And there's a telepathy. I think one of the things you guys probably pick up on, we can have a bad night, but most generally, you know, if somebody's having a bad night, everybody can, like, pick up the, carry them through it, you know, which yeah. We don't have that many. I don't think we have. I think the band now plays better than it ever did. That's my opinion. And I've enjoyed myself. I get tired sometimes, but not tired of the music. So the traveling kind of wears me down a little bit, just a hair.
So the first time you went into the studio with the Headhunters, what was that Picking on Nashville album?
No, let me make sure I know what I'm talking about. The first time we went in the studio was actually, you see, the band was put together in 86. Ricky came up sometime late 86, 87, and we went into, it's funny, a lady, Ricky was singing around Nashville, and a lady had heard him do Walk Softly at some club. She said, if you'll go record this song, I'll pay for the record. And back then, you still can. She would pay for a 45 record. And Ricky had just joined the Headhunter, so he told us about what this lady had said. So we went into Acuff Rose Studio, and I'm going to just throw 1987 out there. I think that's about what it was. We went into Acuff Rose, and we cut Walk Softly, an earlier version of Walk Softly on This Heart of Mine. And the flip side was a version of A Lonesome Me. And plus, we did some other things that day. So that was the first time that we had recorded as the Headhunters in the studio then. And seemed like we may have went into one other studio in Bowling Green, but I'm not positive on that. But really, when it all clicked is when we went to the Sound Shop in Nashville in 1988, and then we started on Picking on Nashville. And everything just seemed to come together. The early Acuff Rose size, we were not quite mature enough as a band, and it sounds way different. We sounded a whole lot different.
So, hey, we want to give a little taste of the music to our listeners now. So,
sure.
I would love to do Walk Softly on This Heart of Mine right now, since we just talked about that.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
All right, and then we'll play this, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with more Greg Martin from the Kentucky Headhunters.
Take you back once more.
program's Lyrics and Legends, and in the studio with me, Buck Weatherby, having too much fun on the phone with us.
Every time I get around the Kentucky Headhunters, on the phone or in person, we have a good time.
Hey, I want to know something, Greg. Before we made this call, did you wash your hands?
Oh, that was so funny. Tell them about that,
Greg. Yeah, let me tell you, you talked about the relationship between Richard and Fred just a little bit, but yeah, we were on the bus, Fred's getting a piece of pizza, and I mean, Richard's lighting him up, wash your hands, and of course, he told him he washed his hands.
Yeah, there was another word or two in there, wasn't it?
I think there was a D word, maybe another word besides that. Yeah, and I think he was jumping on Doug Phelps as well. Was Doug Phelps in on that?
Doug was in,
Doug, God bless him. He, I assumed that he had washed his hands before he'd done it, but he got the brunt of that attack. You know? And, wash your D hands. Hey, man, Richard's scared of COVID,
funny. I've been in business with family for years in a family car dealership that's been around for over 70 years, and you guys have been just basically like working with family for since 68, I guess. Yeah. So how does that work, getting along and living on buses and doing all that stuff?
It's just one big dysfunctional family. you've got a can of mixed nuts, and and the can gets shook up every now and then, but it all comes out okay eventually.
Like your Christmas album you've got coming out.
Exactly. Let's all get together. Well, everybody, we get along fine. I mean, it's a family. I mean, there's going to be people get into it every now and then. You know, into it. The only one that don't get into it with anybody is Doug. He's the ultimate peacemaker, I think. But the thing is, it's a family, you know, and there's enough love between everybody. Everybody loves each other that covers everything, and there's no hard feeling, you know. It's amazing, guys. I don't know.
Nobody really gets mad when Richard makes you wash your hands then.
No, and honestly, he's right. He's right about it. I mean, we know that. You know, it seemed like the guys get in trouble. They won't wash their hands when the pizza shows up. That's the problem. You know,
everybody grabbing that box.
But I remember I was texting you guys after you left. I was telling y'all to wash your hands, I think.
Right? Yeah, that was
funny.
I was like, I had to bring that up.
That's so much fun.
No, everybody gets along pretty well, man. I mean, well, everybody loves each other.
In a normal non-pandemic year, how many shows do you guys usually do?
We don't work like we used to, but yeah, if it was non-pandemic year, I would think getting around 70 shows is about what we would do, you know. That's a good number. I know there's some acts out there. I mean, we used to do a lot more, but that's what we feel comfortable with, you know.
Man, 70 shows this year, a year, though.
I'm going to say around 70. Now, somebody else in the band may say different, but I know we're not doing 80 and 90 shows. But this year, gosh, I don't think we did. What have we done? About 35, 40 shows, maybe, or something like that. Yeah. You know, it's not going to be a normal year, but it's a lot better than last year. Last year, we did maybe 10 shows altogether, you know, and we did, because I tried to count them up, and I think we did about 3 or 4 of the shows before the pandemic hit. Right. Then after that, we kind of, a few things were the most, and it's so funny, except for 2 shows in Minnesota and Wisconsin, we played most of the shows last year in Kentucky after the pandemic hit. It's weird.
Oh, right. Yeah, I can see that.
We didn't do much traveling.
We did a lot of stuff, too, like bringing people into the studio and letting them do live stuff on the air because people weren't able to get out and
get
together like that.
If it was a normal time, I'm guessing about 70 shows a year. That's what I'm thinking is a comfortable number. And that keeps the beans on the table, and that keeps your hands limbered, and you can still stand up with a guitar and not fall over, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Because when we came out of a pandemic holding a 8.5-pound Les Paul, like, oh, my God. I've been doing this a long time, too, man.
So you guys go back into the studio a few years later, and you release an album called Electric Barnyard.
Electric Barnyard, yeah. That was 91.
So talk a little bit about that. How'd you get the name? What was the feeling and inspiration behind putting all that together?
Well, as you know, when Picking on Nashville hit the market, and it was October of 89, none of us were really prepared for what was going to happen. We didn't know it was going to... It really was a big album. When I quit Ronnie McDowell's band in June of 89 to do the Headhunters, I thought, well, this is it for me. I'm going to be working at a factory after this. You know, my music days are done. I mean, seriously, I know it's not much faith in what I do. So I thought, well, I'll probably go out and play blues every now and then. I'll probably be working a job at Walmart or whatever. You know,
well, yeah, you know, Ronnie McDowell, I mean, that was pretty big
well,
billboard name there, you know.
So, yeah. He had a good career going at the time. And the band, me and Doug was in Ronnie's band too. We were actually recording with Ronnie at the end, you know. We were doing we actually co-produced It's Only Make Believe, the version he did with Conway Twitty, and we did an album called I'm Still Missing You. That was a pretty big album for Ronnie. And so then comes along, you know, the offer from Mercury Records, and I'm going to guess the genesis of that deal probably started at the end of 88, I think, and or maybe it was early 89. Regardless, when I had to quit, when we signed our deal, and I think the deal was signed in summer of 89. No, that's not right. Spring of 89. Doug had to quit already because he. Kim had just had a baby, and he had to stay home and help take care of the baby. And I tried to stay out there with Ronnie as long as I could because I knew that was my employment. You know, I didn't have any employment, you know.
Right.
But finally, Ronnie, you know, he knew that we had signed the deal. He knew we were going to have to go do this thing and try it. And he hired my cousin, Anthony, who came out to play guitar for me. And Anthony Kenny came out and took my place. And then next thing you know, I quit Picking on Nashville. I'm working at a record store part time. You know, and this was I started around June of 1989 in the record store. Then when the album came out in October, that thing after Dumas Walker hit, Walk Softly and Dumas hit, it just took off. So you know, Picking on Nashville caught us with our britches down. It threw us out there on the road at the end of 90. The record company was wanting more music, and so we took a little time off at the end of, I can't remember exactly when it was, probably, I'm guessing, around November of 89, we probably took some time off, and then we started getting together in early 91, and we started writing songs for Electric Barnyard, and we were a little tired, a little rough around the edges from all the traveling the year before, but we pulled a pretty good album together. It was a little different from us being on the road as a band. The sound immediately had changed a lot, you know, it changed.
Right.
And
oh, yeah.
I remember the sessions were pretty good. They were easy to do, I thought, you know. The name just, I came up with the name, but it was just kind of a nonsense thing. I just blurted it out in the studio one night. Let's call this album Electric Barnyard. That was it. You know, it don't make no sense, but we don't either. So there
it
you
stuck
go.
Stuck on the wall, didn't it?
Here's a song I want to play for our listeners, and this one, it's an old rocker kind of Norman Greenbaum song, Spirit in the
Sky.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and for our country listeners, I know they kind of cross over, so they're going to know this one. But this one's, I'm thinking, Jim, you know, when they carry me out to the, have them play this for me, will you? By the Kentucky
Headhunter. When they throw you in the sinkhole, they're going to be playing.
Right, going to play this over me by the Kentucky Headhunter.
And Norman Greenbaum's going to be saying, thank you for playing that at your funeral.
Right, he'll probably get some money off of that, I'm sure. So let's listen to Spirit in the Sky, and then we're going to come back and visit with Greg Martin a little more.
When I die. sin, but I got a friend in Jesus. So you know that when I die, gonna send me up to the Spirit in the sky. Gonna send me up to the Spirit in the sky. That's where I'm gonna go.
Programs Lyrics and Legends on the phone with us from I don't know where he is, but Greg Martin with the Kentucky Headhunters and Buck Weatherby in the studio. Greg, where are you?
I'm in Barron County, Kentucky, right outside of Glasgow. I'm sitting in my studio, affectionately called Electric Lazyland.
I think my engineer's familiar with that part of the country.
Electric Lazyland, yeah. I'm just outside of Glasgow.
Hey, I'm
in Glasgow.
I'm going to throw this out there, and this may end up on the floor, but do you know a guy named Doug Combs?
I do. I know Doug. I know Doug well.
That's funny, because he's good friends with us and our engineer, and so we're
love
always...
Doug Combs.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah, Doug Combs was really good friends with another friend of ours named Dennis Billingsley, and Dennis Billingsley was one of the guys that really helped us early on, and Dennis passed away about 3 years ago.
Was Doug Dennis the one that set us up with the interview with Jim Parker? Was that Dennis or no, different guy? Okay, never mind, different guy.
Probably. Yeah, Doug worked at WCDS and WOBO, I think. Now I think he's down in Tennessee now, right? Is he
Woodbury
a radio station?
Yeah, Woodbury.
He's got a radio station. Yeah, I know Doug really well.
All right,
way back. Yeah.
Yeah, when he saw our post on Facebook, he was kind of like, I know those guys, yeah. And we know y'all.
Doug.
And y'all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, love Doug, man. I've known Doug for years.
So the question that Doug told us to ask you is, what did you do with the plaque that Dennis Billingsley gave you, the guitar plaque? Is it hanging in the practice house?
Yes. Yeah, now he gave Richard Young. Now, let me make sure I know what I'm talking about. I think he gave Richard a Fender guitar plaque.
Fender guitar plaque. That's great.
Yeah, he gave that to Richard. And Dennis gave me some old Guitar Player magazines. And he had given me Guitar Player magazines from way back in the 60s and 70s years ago. But I guess Dennis knew he was pretty sick, and he was giving things away.
Yeah, he was.
And, you know, he gave me some albums and... I seem like I got a Gibson plaque from him as well. The Gibson plaque. Yeah. Which is hanging here in the basement, which came out of those stores. Yeah. Yeah. Dennis was a big inspiration to us early on. He really helped us a lot, man. We would need equipment. He would let us buy stuff on time. He did a lot. As a matter of fact, Richard worked there as a salesman. He gave lessons there. I gave lessons there. I worked on guitars there. Dennis was just really great to us.
And that concludes our 6 degrees of separation portion of the program. But anyway, that is funny that we know the same people. That always blows my mind when that happens.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you guys had a pretty big honor here lately. At least I think it's a pretty big honor. You guys were on Huckabee pretty recently. How'd that go?
Yeah, it went great. It went great. You know, man, I'm a little leery about, and now, listen, I'm not going to get into politics here because that's one of my rules. I don't do it.
Yeah, but that's good. We don't do that much either. So.
No, I know. And, man, Huckabee was just an outstanding, nice fellow. He didn't take us down the political trail or anything like that. I could tell he was really, he's into music. Unfortunately, when we posted that we were doing it, there's some people out there that weren't real happy about it, you know, and not that many. Not that most people are very supportive of it, you know. That we, but you got to remember, man, this is 2021. This is not like it was when we first started. There's not that many musical outlets on TV to do your thing anymore. You know, it's not like it used to be. Years ago, you know, when you had a new album, you'd go do Nashville Now, you'd go do Pop Goes the Country, you'd do all these other shows, Crook and Chase, they're gone. Pretty much gone now.
Yeah, that's strange how that's changed so much.
Did Huckabee play bass with you?
No, he didn't, but if we go back on, I'm sure he will, and that'd be fine. I would go back on. I like the guy a lot. I thought he was a really nice fella. Yeah, we had a great time. I think it was an honor to be asked to do it. Their production was great. Their team, their technical team was great, and Huckabee was just a gentleman.
Well, good deal. I just thought that was pretty cool. So
I do too. I thought it was really cool, man. I'm glad you asked because it was.
You know, in the studio, my partner over here, Mr. Buck Weatherby, who's internationally unknown, except
internationally unknown. He's I like that.
Uncle Buck.
He's got this little blues gig he does, and he's getting some people from Europe and all over the country that are kind of tuning in. I'm going to let you guys talk blues just a minute here, and maybe we'll get a couple of those in, because I know y'all have done, the Headhunters have done some stuff with Johnny Johnson, and anyway, Buck, take
over. Let me, I'm going to take off my coonskin cap here, Greg, and put on one of my blues fedoras. I think it's pretty amazing to me when I saw the connection between the Kentucky Headhunters and Johnny Johnson. Johnny Johnson, you know, I've been an admirer of his for years, you know, because I was a big Chuck Berry fan, you know, and Johnny Johnson, for those that don't know the connection, Johnny, that great piano behind all of the Chuck Berry records was Johnny Johnson. And as I understand it, on a TV special, Keith Richards, I think, produced kind of a tribute to Chuck Berry. Chuck Berry even said that Johnny B. Goode was a tribute to Johnny Johnson. But I think somewhere in there was a little bit of a dispute, wasn't there, about Johnny Johnson not getting some credit on some of the things that he did for Chuck Berry. But
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, Johnny probably never got the writing credit he deserved, because he was such a big part of when Chuck would come up with these great songs. I mean, he was a great lyricist, of course, you know, just a rock and roll poet. And he had great ideas, but, you know, I could go back and listen to some Louis Jordan. You can hear Louis' guitar player. There's a lot of that Chuck Berry lick stuff that guy was doing.
Yeah.
You know, that. I mean, Chuck was smart. He knew where to borrow, and he was a smart man. But, yes, Johnny Johnson was such a huge part of those Chuck Berry records. I have a friend by the name of Jimmy Hall that I play with every now and then. We do some blues and R&B stuff together every now and then. And he was out touring with Jeff Beck back in 2015. And I went to the show in Louisville, and I took Jeff Beck, one of our albums, the Meet Me in Bluesland album. And Jeff is kind of he's kind of somber, very, he's kind of reclusive kind of guy. But as soon as he saw Johnny Johnson's name, he just lit up.
Oh, yeah.
And he started, like, he was playing piano. And he said, man, when we were listening to Chuck Berry in England back in the 50s and 60s, man, we loved, it was the piano that drew us in. We loved Johnny Johnson. And then Jeff sat down to me and talked to me, and he was at first he's like, who's this hillbilly in here backstage? Then he sat down and told me some great Rod Stewart stories, you know, and things, and he was laughing about Rod Stewart. But Johnny was Johnny, well.
How did you guys get hooked up with Johnny Johnson? You did two albums with him.
It was fate. It was fate, really. Honestly, we were on our way. Let me make sure I know what I'm talking about. It had to be, we were up for a Grammy in 91. Now, we got a Grammy in 1990. We went to New York City in 90, and I had bought a copy of Johnny B. Bad at Ecstasy Records in Louisville. And I was real excited about that because there was a guitarist out of Louisville by the name of Steve Ferguson playing on it. Some of the guys from RBQ were the band on that album. And on the way to New York to the Grammys, we listened to that album. You know, we were all, me and Richard and Fred especially, were just knocked out. We were just blown away. We loved it. And so we go to a Grammy reception party before the Grammy ceremony the next night. And, you know, there's all these people. There's the Allman Brothers there. There's all kind of folks, man. Buddy Guy, which, you know, I was honored to meet all them people. But here comes Johnny Johnson, and we just flocked to Johnny. And we went right up to him and started talking. Of course, he's like going, who are these hillbillies? Well, our manager was looking at Johnny's manager going, there's a mutual. These guys like Johnny, and these guys are doing really well right now. And then about a week later, or a few weeks later, the next thing you know, there's talk about us going in the studio with Johnny. And this is with the original band with Ricky Phelps in the band, okay? And so I can't quite remember the timeline on this. But Ricky and Doug left the band before we could go in the studio with them. So we were offered to do the album through Elektra and Such. We brought Johnny down, Anthony Kenny, and Mark Ord had already joined the band, and we had already done Rave On. And we went in the studio, we went into the old practice house, and we started writing songs for That'll Work. And that's how that came about. It came about just meeting Johnny. I just say it's fate. I think we were just supposed to do that, you know. That's all I can figure out.
That Meet Me in Blues Land album is great. And about both the albums that you did with Johnny Johnson in there were just
terrific.
You want
to listen to one of those?
Well, we've talked about Chuck Berry. And we've talked about Johnny Johnson, and we're talking to Greg Martin, Kentucky Headhunters.
Hello.
Why don't we put it all together and listen to Little Queenie by the Kentucky Headhunters? What do you think of that, Greg?
Let it go. Let it rip.
All right, we're going to let that go then. We're going to let it rip. Little Queenie with the Kentucky, well, is this... This is the Kentucky Headhunters.
The Kentucky Headhunters okay. with Johnny Johnson.
Okay, all right. Yeah. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
I get a lump in my throat when I see her coming down the aisle. I get the wiggles in my knees when she looks at me and sweetly smiles. She's in a mood, boys, no need to break it. We got a chance, the headhunters will take it. If she can shake it, we might make it. Come on, little Queenie, now don't you break it. Go, 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 little Queenie. Oh, it says go, 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 little Queenie. We said go, 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 little Queenie. Johnny Johnson. Oh, still thinking. If it's a slow song, we'll omit it. Now if it's a rocker, we'll let her get it. And if it's good, she'll admit it. Come on, Queenie, let's get with it.
Programs, Lyrics and Legends. On the phone with us, Greg Martin from the Kentucky Headhunters, and just a little blues there, Buck. Talk about it.
Yeah. I can talk about blues all day long, and I do it at least once an hour every week.
You know, one of the funny stories we got on the bus when we were visiting with you guys was, I think one of the last times y'all talked to Johnny Johnson, he was touring with the Stones, and... You guys called, want to know if he could sit in with you? Talk about that a little bit.
Well, we were recording, and this is, I have to go back and think on this because everything gets a little hazy now. We were in a studio, I'm pretty sure we were working on an album called Soul. And now what year was that exactly? I think, I'm going to say 2002, 2003 is what I'm thinking. And so Richard called Johnny's wife and wanted to know if Johnny could come up to Kentucky and play on, I think initially we were going to get him to play on Have You Ever Loved a Woman and maybe another song. And it turned out that he was down in Texas or somewhere sitting in with the Stones playing with them. And so we had to wait till the Stones got done with him. Then he flew down to Louisville, I think. And then one of our roadies brought him down, and we got him in the studio. And initially we weren't going to be cutting but like one or two songs. But when the lightning hit, we started letting the tape roll, and that's how Meet Me in Bluesland came along. We just kept recording. Wow. Songs just came, they started coming out of the sky, basically, you know. And maybe Keith and Nick kind of helped him a little bit. Maybe they put a little fire in his butt or something. But be honest with you, he always put a fire in our butt. You know, he made us play older than we were. He made us mature young men. Well, we weren't too young, but he made us a lot more mature, you know.
But that was almost, that was in, 2002 or so? Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the funny stories, I think it was, I can't remember if it was Doug or you said you guys called him, and he said, well, when I get finished with Mick and, or with Keith and the guys here, I'll head out your way.
Exactly. Exactly. That was it. And remember, a lot of these, after initially, Have You Ever Loved a Woman came out on Soul, and I'm guessing that album was 2003. I don't have a discography in front of me right now.
Yeah, so those other tracks, 2003, May 6th, 2003.
Oh, what year did that come out then?
May 6th, 2003.
Okay, that's it. Okay. Well, those other tracks just kind of laid around for a long time. And then when we decided we had enough tracks for another album with Johnny, you know, we went in, started cleaning those up, and kind of there might be a song that needed a solo or something like that. And then we put that album together, and we pitched it to Bruce Ziegler at Alligator. And that's how that came along, that second go-around. Plus, I think on that one, of course, Johnny was gone by then. He was long gone. But
now when he played with you guys album, then, he kind of knew he was...
I think when he came to studio, he had some health issues going on. His wife knew it. And, Frances knew it already, because I think she had alluded something to Richard on the phone that he probably wouldn't be around a whole lot longer, and Johnny probably knew it too. So we were smart. We knew that the spirit was in the studio. We just kept saying, okay. We're writing songs on the spot, man. I mean, like, we come up with a groove and we just let it go, and we would say, well, let's try this song. It's like a High Heel Sneakers, which came out a little bit later.
Yeah.
That came out later on as a bonus track on Live and Ramblin' Man. Yeah. But we were open enough to let the spirit take it where it needed to go, and we got a lot of stuff out of Johnny. And then there again, you know, that was we may have played with him a little bit after that, but then, as you know, he passed away, and I can't tell you what year, unfortunately.
Hey, let's get one more song in here with Johnny Johnson and the Kentucky Headhunters. Yeah. Have you ever loved a woman? Is that one good, or you want to pick another one? You got one on your
well, oh, that's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
It's up to you. It's up to you guys.
That's, you know, I'd have to toss a coin between Stumbling. You know, that was a good one. It was on the Bluesland album. But I'll tell you.
That's a good one, too.
I tell you, when Gary and I were with you guys over at Sugar Creek in Hinton, you guys just killed Have You Ever Loved a Woman? Oh, I mean,
oh, thank you.
You guys laid it out there, and it was terrific.
We ought to listen to
thank
that
you.
One.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, we're going to listen
sure.
to Have You Ever Loved a Woman with the Kentucky Headhunters. We'll be back in just a few minutes and more with Greg Martin.
your best friend. Oh, no, no.
Programs, lyrics, and legends, man, Buck, you know, I know we don't get paid to do this, but if we did get paid, we'd be getting paid way too much for having this much fun.
Oh, man. Gary always tells me he's going to put another zero on my my contract.
Yeah, it's yeah. On the end there.
It's always at the front, though.
Yeah, we're up to six figures now. They're all just zeros.
I love it, Greg.
We're having fun visiting with you. You guys worked on a new project. I think it's just been released, just or maybe fixing to be.
Well, it's out. It was the official release date was October 22nd. I don't think some of the physical copies made it to the stores like they were supposed to. I think CD manufacturers are having a little trouble right now, but I think this week everything is starting to hit like it's supposed to. And it's out there now. And that's the Fact Jack's name of the album. And there's a song on there. It's a title track. And we started to work on that back around February this year. After coming out of the pandemic and coming out of, I had COVID last November. Not a bad case, but enough to make me a little fog-brained, I guess.
That makes three of us. last November.
Yeah. Did you guys have it?
Jim and I both had it last November as well.
Oh, that's what we probably had the same strain. Probably now, mine so. Wasn't really, I don't know about you guys, my case wasn't that bad, it was a congestion, fatigue. I never lost taste and smell. Matter of fact, I was hitting the refrigerator. Whenever I get my butt up, I would have to lay there for 5 minutes and go, I need to go to the refrigerator. You know, it would take me forever to get the energy. But when I got the refrigerator, me and the refrigerator became really good friends. I cleaned that thing out. Probably gained about. I'm one of the few COVID people that probably gained 5 or 6 pounds while they had it.
Yeah. That's funny. So this new album, anyway. That's a Fact Jack, and we did listen to a Christmas song off of that thing.
Yeah. You guys played? Have y'all played that?
We did. We were. Again? We've already had comments on that. We played it on Richard's interview and showed up at the show with you guys, and people were saying, "Hey, we like that Christmas song."
Okay.
I think it reminds them of home. Yeah.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a lot of truth to that song. I think it's a brilliant song.
Oh yeah.
You know, the album. I mean, yeah, Richard, he'd been sitting on those lyrics, I know, at least 3 or 4 years. Because he told me about that, around 2018 or 19, he said, I got this Christmas idea song. And we need to get in, cut it. We just never could get in and do it. I mean, last year we were going to go in the studio, and I got sick. And by the time I got through all that crap, it was already December, so we knew we had to wait. But we come out of the pandemic. We're not out of it completely, but when we come out of 2020, January, we talked about going into the studio, and we finally made it in February, and we started recording songs, the 12 songs that are on That's a Fact Jack. And it's a different album for the Headhunters. It's not your grandparents' Kentucky Headhunters, so to speak. It's not the same picking on Nashville band. You know, it's a little different.
Yeah, I've been listening to that a little bit lately in the car.
By the way, there's nothing wrong with picking on Nashville. I'm very, very grateful for it. Believe me, it kept me from having to go back to work in a tobacco field. Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
When or I the factory.
It saved my butt. And I would, nothing against factory work. But I'm just saying, I wanted to play music, and thank God it took off like it did.
Yeah.
But this new album is pretty eclectic album. It's kind of all over the place, you know.
Well, you go to your show, you know, you go to your concert appearances, you know, and you guys are all over the place on that stage too. That's what was so refreshing about
the performance, you know, the variety on the, you know, going from the Dumas Walker to, you know, playing the blues and all the different things that you guys hit on.
Well, blues is a big part of what we do, and I mean, there again, when my plan, when the Headhunters got together, I thought, oh, I'm putting myself together a little blues band, and then we can just go play blues every now and then, you know. And, of course, good Lord had something different in mind, and I'm glad he did because it gave us a career. You know, when Ricky joined, it took it from the blues band thing more over to something else. And we took those blues elements and mixed it with country and rockabilly and whatever else, and it turned into Headhunter music. And but I think the band has grown a lot since picking on Nashville. I think the new album's very representative of what we're doing now, what we are, you know.
So if we picked a cut off of that's a fact, is that the release that you came out with, or is there...
I'll tell you what I would do. Since they're working as a single, what I would do, I think I would go for How Could I.
Okay.
I think that's a good one.
All right. Let's listen to How Could I. We've got just a little few minutes left here, and then we're going to listen to this, and then we're going to come back and wrap this thing up. Man, we really appreciate it.
Now, is that released now as a single?
Yes, it is.
Okay,
it is.
Great. And, I thought it was.
It was actually written by Blackstone Cherry and Richard.
Okay.
And the original demo I heard was nothing like this. It was more of a, I can't remember exactly, it was more of a minor. We took it somewhere else. It's kind of Stones meets the Georgia Satellites, but it's really, I mean, it's a Kentucky Headhunter sound, but it's got our friend Kevin McKendry playing piano on it. I just think it's one of the best songs on the album, I think.
All right. Well, hey, we're going to listen to How Could I. We'll be back in just a few minutes to wrap it up.
When we weren't thinking, 'cause I was wrong, I told you to leave, and now you're gone, I'm all alone. How could I be so damn blind to the fact that you really cared for me?
program is Lyrics and Legends. Buck, man, this is so much fun.
Every time we get with these guys, it's just a hoot.
It is. You know, on the phone with us, Greg Martin with the Kentucky Head. Greg, every now and then I run into Buck and I'm like, you got any ideas for the program? And he'll call somebody. Like, he called Richard Young and Richard answered the phone, which who would have ever thought that would happen? Yeah. He's like, well, you guys do an interview?
Richard would never talk to anybody.
Right.
Hell, I just Googled Kentucky Headhunters and I went from page to page and finally found a phone number there. And I just picked up my Samsung, you know, and I called and he said, hey, this is Kentucky Headhunters. This is Richard. And I felt like saying, no, you know what?
wash your dang hands.
I said, the Richard Young with the Kentucky Headhunters? And he says, you got him. And we've been friends ever since.
Oh, well, he's a fine fella.
Greg, we do
fine
a
boy.
Final segment on our show is called The Department of Shameless Plugs. So this is your 3 minutes to talk about whatever you want to talk about. You can talk about the album. You can talk about family. You can talk about your dog or whatever you want to go. Just take it away.
Can I plug my radio show?
Absolutely. Sure.
Okay. Well, we all do different things when we're off. And Fred Young likes to work on tractors and lawnmowers and things like that, and they farm. Richard works with the Georgia Thunderbolts, and he was very instrumental in Blackstone Cherry's early success. Doug does other things. He writes with different people. Myself, I do. I've been doing a radio show in Bowling Green, Kentucky, called The Lowdown Hoedown since, 2000. Actually, we'll be celebrating 20 years, wow. And I've been doing that. It's really a blues show, but I take liberties with the genres. One week I might go R&B-ish. I might play Aretha Franklin, Otis Redding, James Brown, and things like that. Or I may go back to Robert Johnson and Son House. May play some of the Texas boys, like Anson and Jimmy and those guys. But I have a love for blues and R&B and stuff like that. And that's one of the things I love doing every Monday night from 7 to 10. You know, I've been doing that. I do a live stream, a guitar live stream, for a company called Together, which is a number 2, a G, a T, H, R. And if you put a dot and a co, you can check it out online. You know, Charlie Starr from Blackberry Smoke does it. There's a lot of guys from Sheryl Crow's band does it. I do this thing twice a month, right here from my studio. And, you know, and I do side projects. I do blues things on the side. I'm going to eventually start my own little blues label and take 3 mics and hang them up in a room and record like they did in Chicago back in 1950, you know?
Oh, yeah.
My passion is the blues. And when everything is said and done, I'll probably be on a hover round down here playing blues again. And making blues records, man. Making tens of dollars.
Yeah, tens of dollars.
But man, you know, the radio show and the new album, I'm real proud of I love the Headhunters. I mean, we've been doing it a long time. We took a little idea we had back in 1986. I mean, the genesis of me, Richard, and Fred started in 68, but we had the idea in 1986. We had no idea that it would give us a career and a lot of joy. And hopefully in return, it's given a lot of other people some joy in their life.
Oh, Greg, man, it's been a pleasure getting to visit with you. And we thank you for taking a little time out of your day to visit with us and our listeners. I know we always get positive comments about the programs, and I know they're going to love this one. Thanks again for coming on and being a part of the show with us.
Well, just remember, everybody, wash your dang hands.
Yes.
Wear your mask. Y'all stay safe. Cause we want you to come see us again. Don't get sick. Man.
I'll tell you what. Yeah. Every time I eat a piece of pizza, I'm going to think of you guys.
We're going to start a pizzeria called Wash Your Hands Pizzeria.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. We appreciate it. I know we've taken.
Thank you, guys, and stay in touch, please. It's a pleasure talking to you, and let's all stay in touch and keep the good country and the blues going, man.
This has been another edition of Lyrics and Legends with Gary Ware. Join us next time on the Legends Radio Network.